The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
To be joined by two people who are smiling. We've got Valerie Cox, journalist and author, and Barbara Scully, author and broadcaster. You're both very welcome.
Good morning. How are you?
Now, we should start with the Olympics. So, Barbara, what do you think?
Oh, God. Yeah. Look, let me put my hand straight up and say I missed the sport gene. And I hate to have to admit this on national radio, but I actually haven't watched any Olympic coverage. I'm not ashamed, but like I know it makes me seem like a very shallow person. Yeah. I'm proud. It. I'm delighted to hear of all the success, you know, which is kind of, you know, a new experience, I think, for us in Ireland. Normally we're absolutely baffled when we win at this level. So I'm delighted with all the success. I loved the fact that on social media, I think it was yesterday, the Central Statistics Office shared the information that one in 725 people from Skibbereen are currently participating in the Paris Olympics. And I thought, okay, I get that. Skibbereen is a place where I spent a reasonable amount of time. So I took pride in that.
Barbara, I thought you'd be a pommel horse viewer for some reason. Yeah, I don't know why that event would appeal to you.
Well, we were discussing earlier the fact that we both have been gifted by the good Lord with great height.
That's right.
And I think that's possibly one of the reasons why I missed the sport gene, because I spent most of my years in school dreading any kind of sport.
Because a basketball player.
I was a basketball player. I was bullied onto the basketball team purely because I was 6 foot tall. I couldn't run to save a bus, and I could never run to save a bus. Right. So it was not a happy experience. And I think that possibly is what put me off. Also, and I know you won't agree with me on this, Val, I think as I get older, I don't like my nerves jangling. Do you know when I watch somebody that, you know, if I've skin in the game, like watching Ireland compete in something, I get too kind of...
You get anxious.
I'd get anxious. And then I think, do you know, I'd prefer to hear afterwards what happened. Yeah. And I can deal with that. Val's not...
Val, you're watching.
Val's shaking her head.
Yeah, I mean...
She's ashamed of me.
No, I'm not a sports person, right?
Okay.
I mean, I'm the one who discards the sports supplements in the newspapers. But I absolutely adore the Olympics. I think they're the greatest crack, even if Ireland wasn't in it. I love it. And I love all the strange and wonderful sports. And I've been watching loads and loads of it. And I mean, I never knew that there was BMX in the Olympics.
Yeah.
I'm watching these
girls.
I mean, they're doing loopy loops and bringing their bikes up in the air for somersaults and so on. And it's the most wonderful thing to watch. The other one that's hilarious is to watch the judo. That was on yesterday, and you have these guys who manage to kick one guy over, and suddenly they've won the whole thing, which is extraordinary.
Val Cox would be a judo fan.
I love the sailing. The sailing's amazing. Watching the skill involved in that, and the rowing,
right?
And the table tennis. I mean, you can't even see the ball; they're going so fast. I absolutely love it. And I think fair play to the Irish. They were absolutely brilliant. And I love this piece in the Irish Times today, Dennis Walsh's piece, where he's saying that no longer, you know, are we inferior? We don't feel privileged to be there. We don't feel we're just making memories. There's no tolerance in the system for deferential mediocrity. And I think that really is fantastic.
Yeah, that was a great phrase.
That's a great phrase.
It's a great phrase.
So for generations, were we deferentially mediocre?
We were.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it?
We were like, oh, poor little Ireland. Ah, we've got a medal. How extraordinary for us. Whereas now we're out there among the nations of the earth, if you like, and we're taking it really seriously.
Heads,
and
competing heads held high.
Absolutely. And another thing that Dennis Walsh said, you know, humility is a good look after you win. Otherwise, it's as useful as your appendix.
That's a great phrase, isn't it?
Oh, right. Okay.
Barbara, what do you put it down to that we're no longer deferentially mediocre?
I think you know, there's parallels in other areas to that. Again, going back a little bit, I remember watching Live Aid back in 1985.
Yeah.
Okay. And I remember, you know, I was whatever in my early 20s at that stage. And I remember watching that and seeing Irish flags and seeing you two come on stage and own it and suddenly thinking, we might be a little bit cool, actually, you know, having grown up at a time when nobody came to play in Dublin, no big bands came here because we had no place for them to play. And suddenly, so I think it's part of our maturation as a country after independence, that we're suddenly we're losing this kind of like, actually we're no good at anything, and suddenly thinking actually there might be some things that we're good. We're doing it in at the moment as well in film. You know, I mean, Irish actors and actresses and writers and filmmakers are doing very well. So I think it's part of our coming of age. We're a great little country.
Are we
really
going to lose the one of ourselves now? That's the next thing.
You know what I think is lovely? I think it's lovely the way we're adopting people who are representing other countries. I mean, we have somebody from Hong Kong, I think a grandniece of Charlie Haughey. Yeah,
I saw that.
And what about the woman? I did hear about this. There's a woman who's competing in, it could be judo, is it, for Australia, but she's Irish, of our Irish parents. Yeah. And her granny stole the headlines this week because she was in the audience sporting a lovely red hat.
There was a programme on BBC the other night I thought was terribly funny. And they decided they'd concentrate on all the Northern Ireland participants.
Oh, God.
So they were nicking all of our prize winners as well.
They're good at that.
We'd better move on from the Olympics because it's coming up for the whole weekend, of course. Now, another story I want to talk about is the security review of state buildings to be carried out after Dublin sites rammed. Now, Barry, what do you make of this story? Because, again, it just shows you random events. And a man has been arrested on suspicion of crashing into the gates of Áras an Uachtaráin and government buildings.
Yeah, I think it's an extraordinary story. I also think that there's something wrong with our security when we didn't intercept him after he went through the first gates.
Yeah.
I mean, he went through three separate sets of gates, a couple of kilometres apart. How on earth did he get away with that? He had a great big van that you couldn't miss. He hit the first set of gates, reverses off to the next set, goes through them, and again does it a third time. Yeah. And it's only then that they decide to intercept him.
Yeah.
So they say it's not terrorism, there's no terrorism involved. And I mean, I think running into a pair of gates, that is certainly, it couldn't be construed as terrorism. But I think it's a warning signal, much like the shots at Trump, if you like. It's a warning signal that your security system isn't working very well. And I think that's the worrying thing about it, because the number of incidents we've had recently, you know, I mean, as they say in the Indo this morning, Philip Bryan said, we must take our politicians' security more seriously or we risk a tragedy. And this is the problem, because we're not noticing something like this where somebody wasn't out on an act of terrorism to shoot somebody or whatever. But it just shows you how easily it could have happened.
How vulnerable it is, isn't it? What do you make of it? I mean, is this to do with Simon Harris? I've read somewhere as well that maybe this guy had a beef there. And
To me, having read the bit that I've read about it, and I mean, I think in one of the reports, it does say that he got medical care after he was arrested on the suspicion that he had mental health issues. I'm not sure. I mean, I would like to think that this is just one of those mad random incidents. And I would, you know, as Val said, the fact that he drove 7 kilometres from the Phoenix Park into the centre of Dublin too to do it again and then again is the thing that's the most shocking about this, is that how come the Gardaí hadn't apprehended him before he got to the second place? But I would hate to see, I mean, one of the things, again, I like about this country is that our politicians are very accessible and that, you know, we're not living with... You know, if you go to 10 Downing Street, obviously as a result of the IRA activities back in the day, like this, you can't get down the street and there's barriers and all the rest of it. I'd hate to see that kind of thing, but I do think that perhaps surveillance around it should be increased.
Tighter. Remember the time someone drove into RTE? That was my memory, Barb. Someone rammed a car.
Right,
did they? That was the last time.
And a fella drove a cherry picker again to the Doyle during a budget speech once and parked his cherry picker outside the door.
Is that right?
So, it is a way of, and you know, people do get frustrated and their methods of protest are sometimes a little
random.
But there
is a very serious side to it. I mean, we need to protect those who are in public office.
Sure.
And I mean, part of this is Simon Harris. I mean, the attacks outside his house, protests.
That's awful.
That's just not good enough. Yeah. A man with a wife and small kids.
That's
anybody,
terrible.
In fact. So he probably will now have to move to the lodge in the Phoenix Park for his own safety.
I think so.
And I think it's awful that
we've
got to do that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I really think that's awful.
Now, we have a text coming in already. Isn't that nice? There's people listening to us on this bank holiday morning.
At this hour of the morning.
I know, and you can text the show.
Probably in bed, yeah.
We love text 53106. This is our first item. Roy Keane was slammed and ostracised for demanding higher standards. So maybe Roy Keane was right. So, in other words, this higher standards in the Olympics.
I think I'll wait for the film to come out.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it?
Get the inside story properly, yeah.
I know. Now, our next one I want to talk about is Ozempic. Now, Barbara, this is always in the news, it seems to me, and I covered this on a previous stand-in for Anton about fake Ozempic, but it's on the Daily Mail. It's preying on low self-esteem, crackdown on beauty salons selling Ozempic. What do you make of this one?
Yeah, this is something that makes me kind of crazy. And in fact, we were out last night with my daughters and we were talking about it. You know, the whole way that beauty salons, and I think dentists, if I'm not with Ozempic, but have moved into the kind of cosmetic, what do they call it, aesthetics of practice, so that they're doing Botox and fillers. And now we have the cosmetics industry apparently hijacking the obesity treatment, which is Ozempic. Now, as we know, Ozempic was a drug that I think was initially developed and marketed as a treatment for diabetes, but it was found to have this side effect, which is that it was great at helping you lose weight. And according to the report that is in the Daily Mail today, is that it has been There are beauty salons that are now giving Ozempic injections, part of a care package to customers. And the point is that they're not qualified, that Ozempic should be given under prescription by a medical, by a medical doctor. But to me, the bigger story here is the fact that once again, we have billion-dollar industries that only exist because we have made women feel so obsessed about how we look. And particularly as women get older, that even becomes a bigger thing. You know, women learn that we are judged on how we look from the time we are very young. If you ask young girls how they feel about themselves, I think by the time they're something like 10, they are starting to see themselves as the sum of their bits. So in other words, they'll say, oh, I like my eyes, but I don't like my hair. Or, you know, my hips are too big, but I like my hands. Boys don't do that at all. And that's when it starts, is that women constantly are judged on how we look. And so this is part of that, you know, and it's part of the same thing that as you get older, then you're told you should be fighting aging and you shouldn't be letting your face show what age you are and all that kind of stuff. If women, again, this is some kind of meme that I saw on social media. Imagine if women suddenly started to love themselves, how many companies and how many big businesses would go out of business. And that's something that I think we should be looking at. Ozempic is just the tip of a much, much bigger problem.
It's a serious question, Val, isn't it?
Because it's very serious.
It's a very important drug for diabetes, remember. And this it's really serious because it can be a lifesaver for diabetes.
Professor O'Shea there, Donal O'Shea, that's the HSE's clinical lead on obesity. And he says that the drug is being hijacked by the beauty industry. I mean, it's not a beauty product. It is a medication. And it's so important to so many thousands or hundreds of thousands of diabetics throughout the world that it's wrong for this to happen. And we've had the shortages in Ozempic. Now, Ozempic doesn't suit everybody. I know there's contraindications. And the beauty salons are probably not aware of that. I mean, they're not monitoring your health. They're only monitoring your beauty.
Your
supposed beauty. So, you know, this is so wrong. It's not like they're selling a foot cream.
No.
It really is so wrong that they have any control over it at all.
Yeah, because it's a very serious drug. The serious side effects needs to be monitored very carefully, of course. And if it's a beauty salon selling it, they wouldn't be aware of these things.
So they can't give the medical care with it at all.
I must say, fair play to the Daily Mail for doing that investigation, because obviously this drug is being imported then illegally as well, if it's being distributed through these non-medical channels.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a whole layer of stuff that needs to be looked at there.
There is, isn't there? Yeah. Now, another text. The Olympics is agitating, or not agitating our listeners, but they're very stimulated. So if the state hadn't given the nation sport over 100% of the GAA, can you imagine those players in other sports with good coaching? Now,
when is the GAA going to be in the Olympics?
Well, that's we'd win that one.
We need GAA in the Olympics, surely.
Yeah,
that's the answer to that.
What strikes is the kind of a serious, it's about money, is it, Per, anyway? I mean, you know, the reason Ireland's performing so well, we've got great athletes, of course we have, and great sports people that are very dedicated.
Yeah.
But you need money, don't you?
Yeah.
And the other nations invested a lot more than we did.
Exactly. And again, so, it comes back to facilities. I mean, again, you know, as I say, I am not a sports head by any means, but I think we didn't have Olympic-sized swimming pools for an awfully long time in this country.
Yeah.
So it is about investing and having the infrastructure and the facilities there, because athletes, no matter how wonderful they are, they can't train if they don't have the training facilities. You know, and I think back to somebody like Ronnie Delaney,
we couldn't afford running shoes back then, because they were running on their bare feet, were they?
Exactly. No. But only that he was on a scholarship in America. I doubt if there was the facilities back here for him to be able to, you know, develop his technique and his skill and his prowess to that extent.
Yeah.
So it is good to see that there is presumably more investment.
We probably haven't taken on board until quite recently that being an athlete, it's actually a way of life. Every aspect of your life is controlled. Yeah. You know, your food, your diet, your exercise. Yeah. Everything, every aspect of your life, getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and so on. It's a career in itself. And it's only because we started winning these medals. I mean, as you say, it's like the tail wagging the dog.
Yes.
That we then build an Olympic sized swimming pool. Yeah. And I think we're building some other kind of a park at the moment, I think.
Valerie, it's money well spent, isn't it?
Because it's money very well spent.
I think in my opinion, for two or three reasons. Well, it's great to see our athletes at sort of winning, which is fantastic anyway. And it helps Ireland internationally, you remember.
Of course.
I think the start in America, I was there last week. Oh, Ireland's doing great. But they're role models, aren't they?
Yes,
and maybe our young people, and especially young women, actually, if they see these women,
and will encourage
and they start doing
kids.
More sports.
Yeah, exactly. Which is good nationally.
And it also has to start at a local level. Very near me, there's a park, Kilboggett Park, which has, I was out there walking the dog the other night, and it's loads of pitches, and the GAA are out, but the soccer teams are out as well. But there's now a running track, a proper, like Dunleary Rat Down have put in a proper running track.
Yeah.
And there's kids out there with their coaches, you know, doing laps. And it's fantastic, especially on these summer evenings. There's so much going on at a local level. And that's where the GAA have taught us. You know, it starts in local communities and it starts with young kids. And
we'll save money in our health service, remember, because exercise is so important, especially in young people. It'll be a gift that keeps on giving
it
through their lives.
It surely will.
Now, we've got a couple of texts about Ozempic. My brother is a diabetic who was put on Ozempic by his GP, but got very sick and had side effects, not to be taken without supervision. And
Absolutely.
Another one for you, Barbara. Barbara. It is the women themselves who do the most of the judging.
Well, you know, that's not altogether untrue. I mean, but I always answer that by saying that we live in a society that is patriarchal and also that is ageist. And I think that we all get contaminated by that subconsciously. But that's why it's important to call it out. And I personally believe that older women in particular, because when you get older, you naturally care less about getting other people's approval for either what you're saying or how you're presenting yourself.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that you don't care about how you look, but I only care about what I think. I don't really care about what anybody else thinks. And I think that makes us powerful. Like older women have a real responsibility to call this kind of stuff out for our daughters and our granddaughters.
Absolutely.
Because it is something that is just...
And another one to come in for you, Barbara.
Oh,
I think Barbara makes a brilliant point. Imagine if everyone, not only women, but boys and men as well, just loved ourselves. But no one makes money from peddling that message.
That's
exactly,
and this idea of physical perfection is nonsense.
Yeah, but a lot of women are to blame for this as well.
Yes.
Because, for example, you let your hair go grey, right?
Yeah.
And the number of women who say to you, when are you thinking of colouring your hair? Are you going to leave it like that? Or the number of times I've been told, why don't you pluck your eyebrows? And we're talking women here. We're not talking about
men.
Well,
I might disclose, the three of us are sitting here resplendent in our grey hair, aren't we?
True, we are.
Yes.
And our eyebrows unplucked.
Absolutely.
And that's why we're so wise.
That's right. Precisely.
But Barbara's written a book on this.
I know, Barbara.
Bless you.
Do send us in text to 53106. We've got lots of them coming in. There's people obviously haven't gone away for the weekend, which is great to see. We'll move on. The next one I'd love to talk about is diners behaving badly. This is in the Irish Independent Weekend magazine about diners and restaurants. He walked past a waitress and slapped her on the backside. I threw him out. He was a regular. The question here, Valerie, is the customer always right?
Well, they say the customer isn't always right. And they're dealing with people who have transgressed that and have done awful things. Now, I mean, I really wasn't very surprised by this article because I always assumed that some diners did terrible things. You know, pinching the tomato ketchup apparently is one of them, making off with good cutlery. But you don't take the whole setting, just one or two bits, you know.
You're tactical.
So they've a lot of different chefs talking about it and proprietors and what goes on in their restaurants. And they've actually published a list here of things that you shouldn't do in a restaurant that, you know, really annoy people enormously. I think they're great, actually.
Yeah, great.
And one of the things which never occurred to me was don't live stream your dinner. So the odd photograph is apparently acceptable. Live streaming your dinner. Now, that is disgusting.
Who wants to watch that, though?
Mouth open, eating your food, drooling over the camera and live streaming it. I mean, how disgusting is that? Another one is that this sharing plate thing where you think you're going to save money by ordering a couple of starters and, oh, I'm not very hungry and we'll share. That is not fair to the restaurant where they've got such high overheads and so few can actually survive in, yeah, in the commercial world today. That's very unfair. Another one is, of course, the obvious one. No phones at the table. You really shouldn't have them. But they've got lists and lists of people who have done awful things, yeah, in restaurants.
Obnoxious patrons. Obnoxious. And I've seen, people.
I'm not going to give you the details because it's too disgusting. But there's a number of examples of people who have done disgusting things in the bathrooms and left other people to clean up after them.
Yeah. But and they've done them not where they should be done, in the bathroom.
Exactly. We're talking the floor.
The floor, yes. Yeah. That's not great.
And we're not talking just about men in this respect either. No. Yeah. But
because men do that all the time.
I was in a restaurant one night where a group at the next table had obviously had a lot to drink and one person became violently ill at the table.
Oh, no.
I've never been back to that restaurant.
Yeah.
I just couldn't face it. So what they're looking
is
for here...
Is that in the list of etiquette things? Don't throw up at the
etiquette.
Dining table.
Well, I mean, that should be included in it, yes.
Although, Barbara, I did see one that I could relate to in the etiquette thing and how to behave. It says, use your indoor voice.
Yes.
Now, I'm inclined to boom sometimes.
Yeah, I think that might do with our height as well, because I actually walked into a restaurant last night and when I arrived in, I announced my name and the fact that I had a table booked for whatever time, and I suddenly realised I'd roared it. Do you know what I mean?
I know.
That I'd announced my arrival to the entire place, which was mortifying. So yes, using your indoor voice is very important. It's quite an interesting bit. Don't say you're just not hungry and not order enough food, as Val said. But I have a personal bugbear, which Val and I talked about outside, because she would agree with me. We are both vegetarian. My entire family are vegetarian. There's four of us at home who go out to dinner regularly. A new restaurant opened in my village last night, as far as I know, and we went not to go there. We were going to another restaurant, but on the way we passed it and I said, let's have a look at the menu, which was pinned up outside. Not one vegetarian option on the main courses. Not one. And this is something that in the current climate, with climate change, with biodiversity crisis, with all of that, not just vegetarians, but more people are experimenting with meat-free eating, so that they might decide to eat meat-free once or twice or three times a week. They don't call themselves vegetarian. And then there are those of us who call ourselves vegetarian. It is beyond time. And I actually think restaurants should be incentivized to do this by government, that they provide more than one bloody option on the vegetarian side. There should be at least two to three options on the starters and on the main course, not just for vegetarians, but for everybody. And it's not like we're asking them to provide something that's not in the kitchen anyway. We're just asking chefs to be a little bit creative. Mm. I spend a lot of time down in a place on the Sheepshead Peninsula in West Cork, and there's a bar there called Arundel's by the Pier. They do food on the weekend. They have two vegetarian options on a very small menu, one of which is called cauliflower shawarma, and it is the most delicious, flavoursome, creative dish. And this is in the middle of
and it's
the
not necessarily, I mean, people will say to you, oh, you need a great big hotel to be able to give you the variety.
No.
There's a hotel in Wicklow, Hunter's Hotel in Rathnew. And in fact, we had a little party there recently for our 50th wedding anniversary.
Round of applause. 50 years. That's
survival.
That's achievement.
But, you know, you go in there for lunch and they can give you probably three vegetarian options.
Yeah.
You don't even have to ask and say, you know, will there be something I can eat? Will there be a few lettuce leaves? But the worst experience I ever had was not in a restaurant. It was 20 years ago in a hospital. I was scraped up after a car crash. I was grand. And I was in the hospital and they came around and said, what do you eat? And I said, well, I'm vegetarian. They said, OK, arrived in for lunch. Here's the vegetarian option. And guess what I got? I got a plate with chips, boiled potato and mashed potato, and that was the vegetarian
three
option.
Three types of potatoes. Lovely.
We've got
fabulous.
It's improved since then.
More text coming in about Ozempic again.
No.
It's very, the seriousness. It should not be used by the beauty industry, but has a very important role in preventing diabetes and other diseases with obesity. And by obesity, I mean many people who are in fact dangerously overweight. They need Ozempic more than anybody else, of course, this is as well. So that's a serious point. Now, we're running out of time. We could talk all morning.
We could.
We must do the last one, which struck me as really interesting. Chimpanzees may be capable of learning to speak, study suggests. This is in the Irish Independent, a thing in Scientific Reports. They possess the basic brain building blocks to be able to speak.
I'm not surprised by this at all. I'm a huge animal lover and I don't know much about chimpanzees, but I mean, we know that birds can talk and parrots can be taught words. I know my dog has a vocabulary. Now, he can't speak back, but he understands about 25 words. I know my cats, who don't quite have the same level of, communication skills as the dog would have, but they know stuff. So I'm not a bit surprised that chimpanzees possess the as I said, the brain blocks or whatever, to potentially be able to vote. I think we don't appreciate, I'm a vegetarian, we don't appreciate animals in the way that we should. I think animals are capable of amazing stuff that we know nothing about.
Valerie, if chimpanzees can speak, should we put them in the Doyle?
It's an idea. But I think this this study is the most ridiculous load of rubbish I've ever seen.
Oh, no.
Because each species has their own individual way of communicating. Yes. And what we're trying to do here is put a human aspect onto an animal. Now, we don't speak chimp. I don't speak dog or any other language.
Do you not speak dog?
No, I don't,
I think
Barbara.
I speak a bit of dog.
But no, it's actually quite ridiculous, because why do we think that any other species should be able to adopt a language and call, you know, human speak? They have their own speech. It's not as though they don't have a language. And grand if they can speak. And of course, my dogs do understand things.
Yes.
Especially if they hear the rattle of food or anything else.
Yes.
But I mean, this article, this study is ridiculous. Right. Why should they have a human speech?
Yes, no, that's
added to the their vocabulary.
Language. Ridiculous. Yes. Well, on that note, we have to end our conversation. Thank you very much to both of you. That's Valerie Cox, journalist and author, and Barbara Scully, author and broadcaster, for joining me this morning.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.